Today on The Grey Lodge, we're going to decode the most esoteric episode in all of Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks The Return, Part 8, unloads occult symbolism we have to understand in order to grasp what Twin Peaks is telling us. We're going to cover the concepts of death and resurrection, Bob and Mr. C, that effer Ray, the Nine Inch Nails occult rabbit hole, the Trinity bomb test from 1945, Bob's origin, the experiment, Doug Milford and President Nixon, the mob zone, Got a Light, Dick Tremaine's Got a Light, My Prayer, Goetia Bugs, and we find out today that Laura Palmer is the one. Join me in the Grey Lodge. Now, look, I don't know if this applies to you, but this episode, you must watch. Because I'm not sure, some of you guys are watching the series along with me, some of you have already seen it a million times, and some of you are just following along. You're just hearing the story as I go through the Grey Lodge. And I'm telling you right now, you got to watch this episode. It's pretty wild. I cannot convey some of the ideas that will be presented. I don't have much for clips on this one. It's a very ethereal episode, not a ton of dialogue, yet somehow jam-packed full of ideas that we have to discuss. So join me as we discuss Twin Peaks The Return Part 8. It starts out with Mr. C and that effer Ray driving in their rental car from the prison, and they're headed to the farm. And I'm thinking, the farm? Are we talking about Big Ed's gas farm? Are we talking about Dead Dog Farm from season 1 and 2? Are we talking about an actual farm? I don't know. You're going to find out it's a criminal hangout in Montana, so presumably none of those options, all right? Now, Mr. C, somehow he knows that there are 3 tracking devices in this getaway car that they've been provided. We see these tracking devices on his smartphone, and he's able to disarm them. Now, what's interesting is that on the screenshot, you'll see, and again, I'll put the images on the Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt, like and subscribe. You'll see C, the letter C, fire, the word fire, DX. And between DX is a circle with a hole in the center, like a donut or an O. What does all this mean? Well, we know that fire is important to the world of Twin Peaks, as will be evident today, as in fire walk with me. How does the letter C and DX fit into that? I'm thinking C as in Mr. C. I'm thinking that circle with the center is a donut, as we know is beloved to Twin Peaks. But chalk it up to just another mystery I cannot answer at the moment, but we're going to revisit it later. So Ray, they're driving. Ray thanks Mr. C for getting him out of prison, then proceeds to ask for money to give him these coordinates, because Mr. C wants these coordinates. He doesn't need them. He wants them. And Ray knows them. And now Ray's trying to shake him down for more money. So you know Mr. C don't love that. Ray pulls over to take a leak. Mr. C opens up the glove box and he grabs the strap. And he tells Ray, guess what? You will be giving those coordinates up. But then Ray pulls out his own strap. And he shoots and kills Mr. C. Mr. C's gun's empty. The fix was in. And what's interesting, if you watch this, it really looks like when Ray shoots his gun, and I can't convey this with the clip, it almost seems like it's happening in reverse if you watch it. That's what I think when I watch it. I watched it a couple times, I rewound, I said, it just looks like it's in reverse. And what does this mean for the warden that set this whole thing up? He must have gave Ray the loaded gun, screwed Mr. C over with an empty gun, and knew this was going to happen. I don't know. We then see these, after Mr. C gets shot and presumably killed, we see these dirty soot figures covered in black soot from the woods emerging, and they're dancing like ghosts. And they do this whole sequence of some kind of CPR dance on Mr. C in a sort of in-between dimension and they're smearing blood all over the guy, and Ray's watching the whole thing in horror. He can't even fathom what he's watching. And while they're doing this weird, they're like kind of, I say CPR, it's like they're smearing blood on him or something weird. You see Bob. That's right, Bob. The Bob. In one of these figures. Is Bob leaving Mr. C's body? Or is Bob being re-energized, brought back to life by the woodsman? Because maybe Bob died when Mr. C dies. We don't really know. Ray's freaking out. He runs to the car. He takes off. And he sees those black woodsmans dissipate while we see a strobing light. Now, that strobing light, we recall, that's when all the action happens in the waiting room over in the red room. So Ray calls Philip. He calls Philip Jeffries, presumably. And he tells him he thinks Mr. C is dead.
Philip, it's Ray. I think he's dead. But he's found some kind of help, so I'm not 100%. And I saw something in Cooper. It may be the key to what this is all about. And I told him where I'm going, so if he comes after me, I'll get him there.
And then he says he saw something in him that's the key to what this is all about. What's the thing that Ray saw in Mr. C? Was it Bob? That seems like the most obvious answer. But how would Ray know what this is all about by seeing Bob? How does he even know who Bob is? Was he even alive when Bob was doing his thing? Has he even seen the Most Wanted poster? We do know that the key is symbolic of the mysteries. We've covered this before. We talked a lot about keys in Twin Peaks. We got Cooper's Great Northern Room 315 key. We've got the bank lockbox at the end of season 2 that blew up. And where the heck is Audrey? Where is Audrey Horn? We're almost halfway through season 3. Is she alive? Where's Audrey Horn? But anyways, Ray now knows the key to what this is all about. All right. End scene. Now we're at the Roadhouse. We're used to the performances of the Roadhouse happening in the credits. This time we're presented with a live performance by the Nine Inch Nails. That's right, the Nine Inch Nails, which we all know isn't the proper name. It's Nine Inch Nails. Now, did David Lynch screw up? No, he didn't. David Lynch is besties with Trent Reznor. What the hell is this about? Also, you'll notice an image on the microphone stand. There is a pine cone. We know that the pine cone is symbolic for the pineal gland, the third eye, opening up. Now, I don't know why they're called the Nine Inch Nails. You could argue by the end of this episode that we're talking about a different dimension, a different world. Things are slightly different. But the song they're singing is definitely about Laura Palmer. I believe that wholeheartedly. The lyrics say, "You dig in places till your fingers bleed, spread the infection where you spill your seed." I believe that's talking about sex. "I can't remember what she came here for. I can't remember much of anything anymore. She's gone, she's gone, she's gone away. A little mouth opened up inside. Yeah, I was watching on the day she died. We keep licking while the skin turns black. Cut along the length, but you can't get the feeling back. She's gone, she's gone, she's gone away." Laura Palmer has gone away. Now, we're going to take a good amount of time here to go through a Nine Inch Nails rabbit hole. I've long been obsessed with Nine Inch Nails. I was listening to them when their first album dropped, Pretty Hate Machine, which holds up to this day, from the 80s, bro. The 80s. He was way ahead of his time. Mix of like industrial rock and EDM. I don't know what my favorite album is. Probably Pretty Hate Machine. Downward Spiral is a close second, though. In fact, that's what got me into David Bowie. This is before any Twin Peaks stuff. I didn't realize I was dancing on the edge of the black hole of Twin Peaks for so many years. Because it was around, I don't know, 2005 or so. I had heard that the Downward Spiral was a concept album that Trent Reznor was inspired to do from listening to David Bowie's Low album. And I wasn't a huge Bowie fan, but I thought, well, let me check out that Low album. And I was like, bro, what is this? And I absolutely love David Bowie. I mean, almost everything the guy made was amazing. So, and then, of course, as everybody knows, Bowie, Trent Reznor, and David Lynch are very close. In real life, they kind of are, I don't know, they've done a lot of projects together and such. Now, it doesn't seem, so they've been friends with Lynch for a long time. Seems like a natural fit, right? I'm looking through my notes here. Oh, yeah. And then I'm looking through my notes. I was listening to the Nine Inch Nails EP called Broken. And the first track on Broken is called Wish. Technically the second, if you consider the intro track called Pinion, which is like a short little instrumental thing. But Wish is the first actual track. And they released that Broken EP in September of 92. And this was just a few weeks after Fire Walk With Me was in the theaters. Obviously, Trent Reznor was watching Twin Peaks Season 1, Season 2, even Fire Walk With Me. And then he releases this Broken EP. Now, how involved was David Lynch and Trent Reznor at this point, though? And from what I can read on various websites, they certainly knew of each other. Trent Reznor wanted David Lynch to direct his first video, Head Like a Hole, back in 89. They actually would eventually team up to record the soundtrack to Lost Highway in 1997, which was my first David Lynch movie that I watched. I didn't get it. I loved the soundtrack back in the day when it came out, so I thought, well, let me watch this movie. I was like, what? Bill Pullman, aren't you the president? What are you doing? I didn't get it. I haven't seen it since. I need to rewatch it. So I read this Rolling Stone interview with Trent Reznor from March 1st, 1997. They asked him about how he came to work with David Lynch. He said he was looking for somebody to provide some of the sound for Lost Highway, and a friend suggested he give me a call. I hadn't seen the film, but I'm a huge David Lynch fan. We used to hold up Nine Inch Nails shows just so we could watch the latest Twin Peaks. Gotta love that. So, in fact, I got to see Nine Inch Nails one time. I'm not a big concert guy, but I went and saw them years ago, and it was amazing, you know. So we set up a weekend for him to come over to my place in New Orleans. At first, it was like the most high-pressure situation ever. It was literally 1 minute. Hi, I'm David Lynch. And he's cooler than I ever imagined he would be. 3 minutes later, he's saying, well, let's go in the studio and get started. So we know for a fact that Trent Reznor was consuming Twin Peaks back during the original run. So, now I want to talk to you about the lyrics to the track Wish. Because I see a lot of parallels to Laura Palmer, just like this new track on this Part 8 episode. These are the lyrics. This is the first day of my last days. That reminds me of Fire Walk With Me. The first day of my last days. Remember, Laura Palmer was writing in her secret diary about how she knew she was going to die. So this is the first day of my last days. I built it up, now take it apart. Climbed up real high, now fall down real far. This also reminds me of Fire Walk With Me, because remember she had that classic line about how the angels and, I can't believe I don't know it. I'm going to look it up. I know half of you out there like, oh my God, you don't know the quote? No, I don't know the quote off the top of my head right now. Laura says, and the angels wouldn't help you because they've all gone away. Because she's talking about falling down. Would you speed up or would you slow down, right? She says, you'd burst into fire, and the angels wouldn't help you. So he says, climbed up real high, now fall down real far. No need for me to stay. The last thing left, I just threw it away. And this reminds me of Laura Palmer's last days in Fire Walk With Me. She kind of has these relationships, and she kind of pushes everybody away. Remember, she gets off the bike with James. She's like, I love you. That was the last thing she had left. She threw it away. I put my faith in God and my trust in you. Now, there's nothing more effed up I could do. Wish there was something real. Wish there was something true. Wish there was something real in this world full of you. You know, Laura struggled in this world. I'm the one without a soul. I'm the one with this big effing hole. No new tale to tell. 26 years on my way to hell. Now follow me here, folks. You're probably already a step ahead of me. Trent Reznor, for fact, heard the, I think it was season one, where Laura Palmer says, see you again in 25 years. Was it season one or season two? Man, I'm getting lost in the world of Twin Peaks. Easy to do. So I thought, maybe this is another reference, right? Now, obviously, he doesn't say 25 years on my way to hell. Trent Reznor was born in 1965, so in 1991, when he recorded this, most likely he would have been 26, is what I'm thinking. He's referring to himself there. But how curious, if Laura's appearance 25 years later in season 3 is about what happened in her 26th year, apparently nothing good. I don't know. It's a throwaway theory for that part. Okay. I want to turn, but I can't turn back. And that is Laura. That's the line from the song. I want to, but I can't turn back. Laura definitely feels like she has to move forward. Almost prophetically. Almost, you know, because the log lady is the in the hero's journey, she's like the goddess guiding our hero on her journey, giving her the call to adventure. She says, you must move forward. The world depends upon it. And that was in Fire Walk With Me, remember? When she comes up to her at the roadhouse, and she's like, the fire burns hot, yada, yada, yada. So, there's a lot there, I think. I think there's arguably more there to Laura Palmer than this She's Gone Away track. So let's talk about the music video for that song, for Wish. It was directed by a man named Peter Christofferson. He also directed March of the Pigs video. Very dark, very industrial, very Mad Max. Christofferson was a co-founder of a band called Throbbing Gristles. Throbbing Gristle, excuse me, singular. With his friend Genesis P. Oridge. These guys were the godfathers of industrial rock. You don't get Nine Inch Nails without Genesis P. Oridge and Peter Christofferson and Throbbing Gristle. These two guys, Peter Christofferson and Genesis, they would then go on to create Psychic TV, which is a occult magical order utilizing sex magic through a different outfit that they called the Temple of Psychic Youth. Long story. But Throbbing Gristle was also based on this experimental thing they called the COUM transmissions. Anyway, point being, Twin Peaks deals with elements of actual magic, right? The magician longs to see. And these worlds of David Lynch and Trent Reznor, I assure you, are inspired by the ideas of the occult. And again, no judgment. I'm just saying that that's what it is. So Peter moved on to another magical project called Coil. And they recorded an album called The New Backwards, which obviously reminds me of the backwards talk in the Black Lodge. And where did they record this album? In Trent Reznor's Nothing Studios in New Orleans. Nothing Studios used to be a funeral home. And previous to Nothing Studios in New Orleans, he had La Pig Studio in L.A. inside the home where Charles Manson's family slaughtered Sharon Tate and her friends, right? So Trent Reznor recorded The Downward Spiral in that home. Very dark energy, obviously. And he sold the house, and when he sold the house, he took the front door where they wrote Pig in Blood. Remember, they were trying to set up Helter Skelter, the race war, and they wrote Pig in Sharon Tate's blood. Well, Trent Reznor took that actual door with him to New Orleans to Nothing Studios. So I say all that to say that Trent Reznor and Peter Christofferson are definitely aware of the occult, definitely aware of dark energies. I mean, take from that what you will. New Orleans is also where it's like the most haunted town in America. It's where Nick Cage's pyramid tomb is also. Now, I had a guest, William Ramsey, on my show years ago, and he created a video, it's a couple hours long, about the Smiley Face Killers. That's where I learned a lot of this stuff. And I had him on my show to talk about it. And what we talked about, So the broken EP that the Nine Inch Nails recorded, they actually had a 28-minute video that was never released. It actually got leaked to the internet. It was never supposed to be released. It was directed by Peter Christopherson. And if you watch it, you'll be very disturbed. It's about this crazy killer guy driving around and he's, you know, cruising for dudes. He abducts one and tortures them. And Ramsey takes it into this theory about smiley faced killers and such. But it's a very dark horror movie, basically. It's very hostile, you know, like the movie Hostel or Saw, torture porn. The section for Pinion is bonkers. It starts out with this guy bound up in a leather gimp outfit, and he's strapped to the bottom of this toilet water pipe, being sort of waterboarded, like drowned with water. This pipe's like in his mouth. And they zoom out, and it's like a toilet above him that's flushing or something. It's so disturbing. Anyway, in the documentary, William Ramsey talks about Peter Christopherson's penchant to photograph young men being tortured, allegedly. He had worked for Hypnosis, a place that was creating album covers, and Ramsey found an interview with his employers who said how he had this amazing, quote-unquote, photo portfolio of naked people in bizarre angles, positioned in weird angles, right? And it turned out it was where he was working in a mortuary. And if you listen to, I did two episodes on the film analysis for The House That Jack Built, a very disturbing movie about serial killers. There's a parallel there as well, because that's kind of what he does too. So Peter Christopherson, he did a ton of album covers like Pink Floyd, Peter Gabriel, and so on. Anyway, in the manifesto that Peter Christopherson creates for his band Coil, he says, Coil knows how to destroy angels. Trent Reznor would later create another band called, wait for it, How to Destroy Angels, okay? And in the manifesto, Peter says they are murderers and archangels of chaos and all kinds of dark stuff. Because Coil was into Aleister Crowley and all kinds of occultism using male sexual energy, scatology. Yes, that's poopy. They said that the body is sacred, so all of its production, the poopy, the pee-pee, the tears, the semen, is all valued. And they were in opposition of Christianity, which viewed it through a culture of purity and denial of all these bodily functions. And like purity and Puritan ideas and all kind wild stuff, right? But anyways, Coil was into taboos and stretching cultural norms and all kinds of stuff, right? And you see this in some of these spheres of some of these more extreme artists, you know? Anyway. So the Roadhouse performance, that was it. That's the Nine Inch Nails rabbit hole. So the Roadhouse performance wraps up, and we get a shot back to where Mr. C was killed, lying there in the dirt. And boom, Mr. C sits up. He's alive. He is dead, yet he lives, like the Undertaker, coming back to life. So we basically witness the death and resurrection of Mr. C, who we know has Bob as a dark passenger. Is Bob still inhabiting Mr. C's body right now? We'll come back to that in a minute. And the episode abruptly shifts gears at this precise moment. Why? Why did we go from a relatively typical Twin Peaks experience? You know, up until this point, all the Roadhouse music was, I don't know, alt rock, college rock, prog rock, whatever you call that. And then Nine Inch Nails comes out with their industrial rock sound. And it's clearly a different mood. And from here is where we start one of the greatest sequences in all of Hollywood history. It's the atomic bomb sequence. The screen goes black and white. You get an image of the desert. And it says July 16, 1945, White Sands, New Mexico, 5:29 a.m. And we get ready for it. Seven, five, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. And the camera is, it's like a drone zooming in on the mushroom cloud. You know, the countdown starts and you see the detonation of the Trinity explosion and this mushroom cloud start. And words, this is why I say you have to watch this episode. Words cannot express how eerie this scene is. I honestly feel like if you could crawl into the middle of this violent, scary explosion, this would be what it feels like. You know, Oppenheimer said, "I am the destroyer of worlds," after this happened. And this is a major shift in the human psyche for a million reasons. But the music they choose to play, it's like screeching. It's like pure terror. It's not a good feeling when the bomb lights up. This isn't supposed to be awe-inspiring. It's supposed to be terrifying, all right? And if you have the volume up real loud, it's unbearable. And this is so far up David Lynch's alley, you know? Somehow he makes something really upsetting and you don't know why. And if, to me, it feels very similar to the Kubrick 2001 Space Odyssey experience of going through the wormhole. These are feelings that stay with you. Very surreal, very psychedelic. And when you get inside the Trinity explosion, you see there's lots of little mini explosions and fires, and it makes me think of the Red Room, right, with the strobe lights flashing and the fires popping off. It feels very chaotic inside this blast. And the occultists always talk about chaos and order. I previously just talked about Peter Christofferson's Manifesto for Coil, talks about chaos. And they're always into this idea of chaos and order. And to me, this feels like the ultimate in chaos. It's unfolding and rippling and reverberating, and it's a whole mess, right? And then it takes me back to the beginning of the episode with that tracker, right? The C Fire DX thing. Could the interpretation be Mr. C, that's the C, sees fire, like from the Trinity explosion, there's the fire, and then we get the DX, the donut in between the D and the X. And we talked about, in the season 2 finale, we talked about all the circles and the circular nature of things in this show, Twin Peaks, related to the Hindu idea of samsara, of life and death and rebirth. And X is the symbol for death and resurrection of Osiris in Egyptian occultism. So perhaps that's a valid theory for the meaning. It's a stretch. I'm throwing it out there, though. You know, Mr. C sees the fire, and we get D for death, and the resurrection is the donut with the X, because Mr. C dies and gets reborn in this episode. Now, obviously, the timelines are different. Are they? I think they are. You know, Mr. C is, what, 2016 or whatever, that 25 years after night. Oh, boy. It's a mess. Trying to track the timelines in Twin Peaks is a nightmare. I guess 25 years after 1989? Because Laura Palmer dies in 89? Who knows? Anyway, we see the convenience store next. Or a convenience store, I should say. And it's showing a time lapse. You see some smoke clouds coming and going and more chaos. Like the idea here is that the Trinity blast is having an effect on the rest of the world. And the lights are going on and off inside the building. And there's this whole gang of woodsmen just hanging around. And it shows them going into the convenience store. Like they're taking up residence inside this shop because of this blast. And recall the poem, the season 1 poem. Through the darkness of futures past, the magician longs to see one chance out between two worlds, fire walk with me. We lived among the people, I think you say convenience store. We lived above it. That's what Mike told Cooper, right? Hey, remember he said, but I saw the face of God, I was changed. I took the entire arm off. My name is Mike, his name is Bob. Talking about the two different spirits. So is Mike, the spirit of Mike, manifested into one of those woodsmen and put into the convenience store? I have no way of knowing that. Recall in Fire Walk With Me, Missing Pieces, we talked about the the deleted scene called Above the Convenience Store, where all these entities were partying. So we know that the blast opened up a gateway, and now the homeless woodsmen are chilling in the convenience store. And they maintain residence there above it. Okay. Meanwhile, back in the Trinity blast, you see this entity with the cutest little tiny baby horns exhale somewhere in the blast, I guess. We don't really know. Like I said, it's very ethereal. And out from it emanates various spheres, and one of which is Bob. Wait a minute, what? Okay. Now, from the timelines that I think we've got, Mr. C died in, 2014, 15, 16, 17, whatever year that is, we just saw. And we saw Bob hanging out there. But now we're going back in time to 1945. And here we see Bob entering the world through this little devil horn thing. Is this the same horned entity from Season 3, Episode 1 that came through the cube in New York City? The experiment. And I would argue that that's why they call it the experiment, because the Trinity site was an experiment to test the nuclear bomb. And that experiment brought this entity into our world. And we see that the experiment plunged Bob into our world, and that's more of the origin story. He was sent to Earth, or the Black Lodge, or the Waiting Room, or whatever, back in 1945 when they set off this explosion. And later, after that, at some point inhabits Leland Palmer's body. Recall, Leland saw Bob at Pearl Lakes as a boy. Then he tries to inhabit Laura Palmer's body. And then we know that he ends up going into Dale Cooper's body and getting manifested into our world that way. And we know that there's another spirit named Mike. And Bob and Mike, if Mike is at the convenience store, it gets dicey here. But we know Bob and Mike were feeding off of fear and Garmin Boja since the blast in 1945 now, okay? And I would say, if you use David Icke's shape-shifting lizard theory concept, he says that the reptile shapeshifters, they have to consume fear and Garmin Boja in order to stay manifested into our dimension, into our world. Like, if they're not feeding off of the Garmin Boja, they can't really, participate of the things of this world, the sins of the flesh. They're kind of stuck in that ghost mode. So that's why they do it. So let's go back to Season 3, Episode 1. We talked about how the entity is called the experiment, and it's described as pale with a feminine body, a gaping mouth, and two small horns, and reversed thumbs. Now, Mark Frost did a Reddit AMA and discussed this entity. Someone asked, I combed through it, someone asked if it was manifested through sex magic. Someone's on the pulse here. No answer from Frost, though. Damn. Now, if you go to the Secret History of Twin Peaks, you'll recall we talked about how Doug Milford linked up with President Nixon, and Nixon takes him to a warehouse and shows him a gray alien. So Doug Milford goes down to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida to meet President Nixon. He's shown a UFO, a triangular UFO, and a gray alien, and that gray alien can appear and disappear into our world. Sounds a lot like Bob. And it's described as a gray, I'm thinking possibly lamb, right? Because Mark Frost talks about Crowley and Parsons and all that in that book. If you haven't listened to that episode, I put a link in the show notes. Check it out. Now, President Nixon's last contact with Doug Milford, he was talking about a secret program by the Wise Men starting in 1953 called Gleam. Then later in 1966, renamed Aquarius. All those are right after the Trinity test, okay? The Wise Men were worried that one of the regular agents was going to piece together how they already had made contact, because there's levels to this. And it talks about how there was crashes in 1949 and 1958, and that's the one that had the alien that Doug saw down at Homestead in Florida. So was this entity we saw at Trinity, this experiment, was this also the same one seen in Season 3, Episode 1, And was that the same thing that Nixon showed Doug Milford down in Florida? I believe it is. I believe so. Recall what Nixon said to Milford. He said, But I can tell you these things are part of something even bigger, something old and dug in. It's been here all along, watching us. More than that, manipulating. Okay? I think we're witnessing Bob's origin story, and it's something ancient and something extraterrestrial. And maybe this is why we have a character called Harry Truman in the show. Because Harry Truman was president when that Trinity bomb he gave the green light to launch that thing, to blow it up. So here we go into, I would argue, the best scene in all of Twin Peaks. Maybe. I don't know. Hot take. We go into another sort of mauve zone, a purplish mauve zone. There's water. We're in the middle of an ocean. The water crashing against this large structure. And it reminds me of season 3, episode 3. Part 3, excuse me. Where Cooper falls into that mauve zone building. Remember we talked about that? Now this is another incredible scene. But notice it feels like we went from this the Trinity explosion with all these particles. And we traveled through it. And now we're traveling into this structure. It feels like we are flying into it. Like we're the passengers on this ride. Okay, we're being initiated. Kind of like Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey wormhole sequence. Now inside of the structure, once we get into this mauve zone-ish structure, there's a bell, a big giant bell thing, bell-shaped thing. This is the same thing from season 3, part 3. Remember? Remember, Barry's? Season 3, part 3 was, there was that cube out in space, and Cooper goes to talk to that woman. But it didn't have the electrode things on the outside of it mounted to it like this one does, so it's a little different. Anyhow, you hear a phonograph playing music. There's a woman sitting there. You're like, who's this woman? And is that the phonograph from season 1? Remember, Leland Palmer had a phonograph that he was always playing, dancing around? An alarm starts to emanate from that bell, and here comes the giant, right? We now call him the fireman. But he's the giant from season 1 and 2. And maybe this is why they call him the fireman. Because he's responding to an alarm. Right? He's been on watch this whole time. And I'm thinking this must be the room from the beginning of season 3, part 1. When, at the very beginning, when the giant, aka the fireman, gives Cooper his instructions. But remember, we're assuming that right now the scene we're watching is 1945, not 1990 or 89 or 2015 or whatever. So it feels like this is the fireman's home, right? Maybe this is the White Lodge. So the giant, the fireman, turns off the alarm and he heads into a giant theater room. And we hear, if you listen, his footsteps sound like they're backwards. It sounds like they're in the Red Room, sort of, you know? And the backward stuff makes me think that maybe we're going back in time or retracing scenes. I don't know. It's weird. But anyways, now we're in this big theater room, which is appropriate because Lynch has this obsession with theaters and red curtains. And it appears that we have another bell structure, but the giant, the fireman, walks right past it, turns on a massive display, and now he's watching the Trinity explosion from this giant theater. And then he sees the convenience store woodsman, and then he sees that the experiment, the Hornady spewing Bob out. And he pauses the screen. And at this point, when that the experiment is spewing the Bob sphere out, he knows he has to do something. He knows this requires a kind of action from him. That's why he's the fireman. He's watching. He's on guard, on standby for something to happen. And that's the thing that happens. So fireman, he's like, okay, it's go time. And he starts levitating and he floats up in the air. The woman comes in and she's smiling. She's smiling like either she's seen this before or she's been waiting for this to happen. She knows she's going to witness something beautiful, something positive. That's why I think this is the White Lodge. And the giant and beautiful Angelo Badalamenti music is playing. Oh, this whole scene just, it's amazing. The giant emanates gold dust from his pineal gland. There, you know, we talked about the pine cone earlier. His pineal gland emanates this gold dust. And again, with the flashing strobe light, like in the Red Room, and this gold dust condenses to a gold sphere. And when you, when the gold sphere coalesces, you see it's got the face of Laura Palmer. Laura Palmer is the one. We've said it many times. But now we know it. Now we know why she's the chosen one. She was generated in response by the fireman to the Trinity explosion, which opened up a gateway and allowed evil to enter our world. Laura Palmer is the source of all that is good. If you want to look at it from a Christian parallel perspective, you could argue that this is God sending us his one and only beloved son to save the world from sin. Is there elements of heresy in there? I mean, maybe, right? This is pop culture, but, you know, you could take it however you want to take it. It's very subjective. Lynch and Frost are very clear about, like, look, there's no definitive thing. This is art for you to sort of find your own meaning. So that's why I think it's a beautiful story, right? And what's interesting is that in the gold sphere, Laura Palmer's face, it's the iconic homecoming photo, the homecoming queen photo. And it makes you wonder, like, why that photo? Why not like a baby of Laura? Why that one? It's iconic to the Twin Peaks, no doubt, but we're in this ethereal place with these gods of some sort. And not to mention, this is 1945, so these nuclear events sparked this whole sequence. I mean, Laura Palmer wasn't born until 1972 and died in 1989. So what's going on from 1945 when the Trinity test sparked all these problems and the fireman's like, okay, bet, let's send Laura Palmer down to save the world? Because she doesn't show up until 1972. That's a 27-year age gap. I was hoping it was going to be 25 years. Again, that's two swings and a miss with the 25 years. We had the Trent Reznor thing and now Laura Palmer. So I don't know what to make of that. So the woman, the sphere of Laura comes to her and she lovingly kisses it and releases it and it starts its journey to Earth. You see this device sort of launch it down to planet Earth. There's mysteries loaded into this scene, no doubt about it. But one thing we know for sure, this is confirmation that Laura being called the One was for a higher purpose. The Log Lady knew it. It's in some of the Log Lady introductions. It's basically what Log Lady tells her at the Roadhouse. Now we know it. You even see the Laura orb being sent to Earth. You see it on the screen, the Earth, like it's shooting right to the Earth, which confirms us that this is another realm. I don't think it's another planet necessarily. I think it's another realm, another dimension. I think it's the White Lodge. And recall all the examples of spirits looking like gold orbs on this show. You see it a million times over. So I would argue that the giant or the fireman is supposed to be some kind of god. And in fact, in the Lynch Oz documentary, they juxtapose the spherical orb of the Good Witch to, in the Wizard of Oz, remember that? To the Laura Palmer orb. Right, and recall that Cheryl Lee played Glinda the Good Witch in Wild at Heart. All kind of connects. So crazy stuff going on, and we actually see 1945 tick up to 1956, and it says August 5th, New Mexico desert. All right, so 11 years, 20 days goes by. Is that relevant to anything? I don't know. That's what he tells us, though. And this bug hatches from the sands of the desert. And the implication I think we have to take away is that this thing's been here waiting to hatch since the Trinity explosion of 1945. Is it Bob? I don't know. The 11 years was some kind of incubation period, and 11 is the number of magic and the occult. I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out here. But it hatches, and it looks like a frog, and it's got no front legs. It's got wings. You also see it's a full moon, which triggers this thing to be birthed. If you look it up, it wasn't actually a full moon on August 5th of 1956. It was a waning crescent moon. Who knows what's going on? Meanwhile, two teenagers, they're walking home from the bop or the sock or whatever, the sock hop, whatever they did back in the 50s. And she finds a penny with the heads up and picks it up for good luck. Will she have good luck? Well, let's just see what kind of luck this young lady has. The boy kisses her goodnight. She goes inside her home. And at first glance, I thought they were walking in front of a convenience store because it looks similar. I don't think it's supposed to be, but just something to take a look at when you watch the episode. Meanwhile, an older couple is driving through the desert, and you see all those woodsmen just wandering around. It reminded me of the beginning of John Carpenter's Halloween, when the insane asylum are just like kind of roaming around. And one guy with a beard, kind of the most iconic woodsman, he goes to the window of the car and he keeps repeating, got a light, over and over. And hear tons of static, which I think is Geiger counters, meaning we're still dealing with the Trinity blast effects. And I'm thinking the woodsman is connected to that, obviously. So this episode is called Gotta Light, G-O-T-T-A space, L-I-G-H-T. But the captions, when the woodsman is asking for a light, he says, got a light, G-O-T space, A space, L-I-G-H-T. What is this about? It's because the explosion of the Trinity blast is mankind's insatiable urge to self-destruct. It's the Eros and Thanatos forces, the drive towards death. That's why we're making tons of weapons and we're constantly at war. There's a drive towards death. And when it says gotta light, it means like fate and this drive inside of us takes us down this path of destroying nature and destroying ourselves. Go all the way back to the pilot episode. I talked about the opening credits and we talked about the Ghostwood National Forest and how man loves to destroy and all this crap. We're not evolved to stop doing this. And recall Dick Tremaine said this in season one or whatever, which led him to lighting the cigarette. He's like, got a light. And he lights the cigarette, which triggers the sprinklers, which forces Bob out of Leland. There's something there to it. So the smoking woodsman, he finds a radio station in the distance and head towards it. And you hear music. It's The Platters' My Prayer. And the lyrics are, when the twilight is gone and no songbirds singing. But recall in season one, we know that the Red Room is described as music playing. Now, interestingly enough, this song charted in August of 1956 at number one. So the bug hatching might be part of the trigger there. I don't know. So we see the town. It's very 1950s and so on. We got Pop's Diner, not Hap's Diner, but Pop's Diner. And the woodsman enters this radio station, and he asks the woman for a light. She's terrified, rightfully so, and he kills her with his bare hands, squeezing her head. Then he does the same thing to the DJ and takes over the studio and repeats to the listeners the same message over and over and over. Take a listen to this madness.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full and ascend. The horse is the white of the eyes and dark within. This is the water and this is the well. Drink full and ascend. The horse is the white of the eyes and dark within. This is the water, and this is the well. tank full and a sand. The horse is the whiter the eyes, the dark within.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full and descend. The horse is the white of the eyes, the dark within. Now, you could interpret this in a million different ways. The first thing I see is the horse is the white of the eyes. All right? I think of the white horse. I think that's the takeaway here. I could be wrong. I could be talked into something else. That woodsman feels very nefarious. And it's such a weird, bizarre statement. This is the water and this is the well. Drink full and descend, right? When I think descend, I think we're going down. We're going down into the abyss. The horse is the white of the eyes, the dark within. And I think of the white horse of the apocalypse. I think it's his way of saying that man is headed towards the apocalypse, using that sort of Eros Thanatos idea of a death drive. And he's telling people, like, yes, keep going. Keep dropping those weapons or whatever. I don't know. Either way, the people listening to the radio, they all, like, they drop dead or they're unconscious or something while they're listening. So the statement has some kind of magical incantation. It's actually affecting the people hearing it. And he says it over and over and over. Now, that bug that hatched is still crawling around. And I looked it up, and I thought, man, is this a creature from the Goetia? And I looked through, and I didn't see anything that in Solomon's Lesser Keys book that describes it identical. The closest thing I could find is something that's got wings. It's got 6 insect legs, just like this thing does, but it doesn't have the frog legs in the back. And that was Beelzebub. Okay, so pretty dark, right? And if you go to the Twin Peaks fandom, they'll say that this is a hatchling or a frog moth. And when you dig into it, the concept of the creature originates from a story related to, it says related by David Lynch in Quinoa, a short film released alongside Inland Empire. And in his Room to Dream autobiography, it involved a frog moth that Lynch saw while traveling in Eastern Europe. Executive producer Sabrina Sutherland referenced the story and described the creature in Part 8 as a frog moth in a Reddit AMA. The creature was referred to as such on the set by Lynch and the visual effects company BUF. So officially it's called the frog moth. And the creature's back part was based on a drawing by Lynch. The drawing is undisclosed, but it's quite similar to one of his ballpoint Ben drawings. And it says that the creature's egg may be one of the eggs disgorged by the experiment, you know, when it was spewing out Bob. And it says it's suggested in the transition from 1945 to 1956 that its egg lies on or near the Trinity test site. All right. So anyway, the girl we saw earlier that picked up the penny for good luck, right? She's listening to the radio with this nut job ranting on and on about horses and water. And she's either sleeping or unconscious because, like I said, people start dropping. And the bug, the frog moth, flies into her window, crawls up to her mouth, and she opens her mouth as if on command, and this bug crawls inside. It feels like the radio transmission was somehow guiding this girl to open her mouth to facilitate this operation happening. He was using a magical incantation spell to make this bug go in her mouth. The woodsmen were using the phrase to guide this thing. And at this point, the woodsman is done with the radio. He walks outside, a mission accomplished, apparently. And if you listen, you can hear horses in the distance neighing. Like, the woodsman is trying to facilitate an operation to bring about the apocalypse. The credits roll, and you see the girl, she's sleeping, and all you hear is this electric static noise in the background. And it reminds me of all those electrical noises you hear throughout Twin Peaks when these entities are nearby, right? So in conclusion, what is going on? We went from cherry pie and coffee to this. And if you didn't know better, you'd say, this is insanity. What are we watching? And if you look at the timeline, there's almost a circular donut nature for what we're watching, right? 2016, Mr. C gets shot, the Nine Inch Nails play, and the Woodsman and Trent Reznor bring Mr. C back to life. And from this point, we go back to 1945. And the Trinity explosion triggers the fireman to make the Laura orb and all this stuff. Then 1956, the egg hatches in the sands and the frog moth crawls into the girl's mouth in 1956. Then in 1972, Laura Palmer is born. Then 1989, Laura Palmer is killed. Then 2016, back to Twin Peaks The Return, back to Mr. C getting shot. So it feels like we're kind of on the donut. We're kind of on the samsara. Or what is this? What's the next episode? Are we going to be in 1972? It's as if we're shown this cycle and plot. Plot spoiler. You're not. You're back in what seems to be 2016. But it seems as if we're shown this cycle, this repeating cycle, this recap of the history. And you know, is the God of Light phrase about man's incessant Thanatos drive to kill ourselves? You know, not to mention the woodsman with a cigarette that he never actually lights. Now, if you notice that, it's the 1950s. Everyone has a lighter. Everyone is smoking. He never gets a light. I feel like the evil woodsmen are asking for a light, and this was Bob's first possession. Everyone is terrified of this woodsman when they see him, right? This woodsman's clearly evil. And he's talking about the white horse. And at the end, he's walking to the desert and you hear the horses. And in season one, season two, you had the white horse when Leland turned into Bob that showed up. And we talked about the whole thing, right? It's all symbols for the apocalypse, basically. And on our next episode, we're actually not going to talk about part 9 yet. We've got a little bit more to unpack with this part 8. So the next episode is going to be Kenneth Grant's book, Outside the Circles of Time, that I've combed through here. I read the first half. There's a lot in here. Because in the first half is where he talks about this, the atomic bomb testing opening up portals, opening up gateways. Because we have to understand what Kenneth Grant's book is talking about in order to understand what's going on in Twin Peaks. Because that's what this is all about. This is all about heavy-duty occult ritual magic, Aleister Crowley, Kenneth Grant, and I will prove it to you on our next episode of The Grey Lodge. So thank you for listening. Thank you for continuing your journey with me. And until next time, stay positive.